everyone. Happy to have you here for another episode of Legacy Matters. Today, as usual, we will talk about whatever comes up with a slight leaning toward discussions of preserving your legacy, preparing for things to come, and sharing stories we find amusing.
All right.
Hello, everyone. We are recording yet another episode of Legacy Matters, and today it's myself, Sam.
And me, James.
And we've got Mercedes Austin.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. Mercedes. And Mercedes, you are, welcome, by the way.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah.
Thanks. Beautiful space. Great natural light. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jim's art is always a highlight of this spot.
I mean, looking at all these blank canvases, I mean, I just...
Right. Things are going to get busy real soon here.
Yeah.
We've got some...
Yeah, we're doing some smalls. So the big
when he says we're, he means
me.
Exclusively him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do that too.
Yeah.
To my team, we, but I really mean you, but here's what we're...
Yeah, it's really me by myself.
Yeah.
When
no
one else is here.
Well, except for all the kids you hire to do the airbrushing.
Right. He thinks this is all airbrush. So he likes to tell me that
a bunch of little kids come in. I see.
In the weekend, and everyone airbrushes.
Yeah, he farms his art out.
And finger painting.
I mean, clearly kids are doing this.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
They do a beautiful job, though. I will give them credit for that. So, Mercedes, you own and run Mercury Mosaic Style, correct?
I do, crazily enough.
Yeah.
That's me.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and we've... In full disclosure, we have installed a bunch of that tile, and I mean, not as much as we'd like to, but it's really gorgeous stuff. So
yeah, I feel like you guys have installed about 7 projects, and you have 2 on the horizon.
That sounds
you got to just get the house, the frame, and all the parts ready to receive the tile. Tile and wallpaper are always the last things, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the finishing touches.
That's we just placed an order with you last week.
That's awesome.
Or paid for the order.
Yeah, I'm excited too because our team right now they're like a 2 to 3 week lead time. We have fully instituted, there's many facets of it, but lean manufacturing. So.
Ooh.
The tile that you guys have ordered are among some of our most popular shapes. So essentially, they have all that tile is all made at our factory. It just doesn't have color on it.
Right, it's not glazed.
So when orders get placed, they glaze their inventory, and then the tile makers are simply making tile to replace the inventory.
Yep.
So it really removes 2 to up to 3 weeks out of what was once our lead times.
Wow. So you used to make it on demand?
We used to make everything from scratch.
Yeah.
But we've focused so much in what we're selling and what we're promoting so that the things our clients are choosing are in some way, shape, or form impacted by what we're focusing on.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, which makes sense. I mean, that's marketing, right? Like our clients are totally drawn to the stuff that you market to them, of course, which is the way it works. But it's gorgeous, gorgeous stuff.
So let's hear, like you just recently kind of moved into a new space, recently meaning the last few years, right?
Yep, a year and a half ago.
Yeah. So how was that transition? What size space did you move from? Because right now it's pretty impressive space.
Thank you. It is a tripling of the size of the space that we were once in, and I can't even quantify the increase of natural light.
Yeah.
It's every single surface has a window and some several. So that's a huge increase, and studies have been done about the impact of natural light on human beings. And, you know, the most important part of my business are people. They're handmade tiles, not machine-made tiles. So naturally, over the last 16 months, no coincidence, we've actually built the best production crew that we've ever had. So,
In your space, I mean, let's describe your space. How tall are the ceilings, do you think?
22 feet.
22 feet high, and then there's windows all the way around sort of the top, correct? And then there's a whole side of the building, too, that's windows.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of natural light in there. Yeah. It's flooded. It's like an airplane really hangar.
It is.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Of glass.
Of glass. Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful.
A greenhouse. Like two wings. Something. You go in the first real entrance and production space, and then you have this surprise additional airplane hangar space around the corner.
Yeah.
Essentially, my space is two spaces combined.
Right.
So we really had to look at, in selecting this space, do we select a space that's larger relative to the increase of spaces? This is my fourth space. This will be my 17th year in business operations next month. And I had to really consider, of the prior three spaces I had, how long was I in that space before I really filled to the brim and it was harming us rather than helping us to be in that space. And so that's what I considered when I took on much more space, because I just had to really believe, it's not like with a crossing of my fingers, but just really believe in the power and the growth that we were going to have going forward. And even though it might have been a bit more painful in the front end to take on that large of a commitment, I knew in the long term I would be thanking myself for doing that through efficiency. And you know, our last space, our last year and a half, we were turning down work. It was incredibly painful. We didn't have the space.
And all of your spaces, so we're in Northeast Minneapolis right now. Mm-hmm. And have your spaces always been in Northeast?
Mostly. So my first space was in North Minneapolis.
Okay.
I was in 1,100 square feet in this building called the Old Rainbow Bowling Alley.
Uh-huh.
We were on 2nd Street North and West Broadway. So our neighbor was Gorelick Steel. We were
just across from
Discount.
Right over here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Irv's Bar was across the street from us now, the headquarters for Master Construction. So Master Construction had taken over the Old Rainbow Bowling Alley and just did an exceptional job transforming it into multiple business spaces. Now the anchor tenant over there is Way to Grow. They've been there for at least a decade. So I was in that building for 5 years.
Okay.
So that was my very first commercial space. I had my studio on the main level, and I had this bright idea to put my kiln in the lower level so that I wasn't working near it. And so at first, it was really fun. It was like a workout to bring trays of tile up and down stairs. And then as we got busier.
That's you, right?
There's like how many other million questions that come up. I mean, like.
Right.
Well, because you two perhaps had met, you know, in your younger days when you were a bartender. Right?
Waitress.
Waitress.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So I frequented a place that you worked.
Yeah, which was. I love it to this day. It was Cuzzy's.
Yep.
And I think that just people in general, my philosophy is like everyone should at least have a job for a bit in the retail or in the food service industry.
Absolutely.
Just to like learn how to treat and deal with other human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're, I mean, especially if you're going to do anything where you have to deal with clients or customers. I mean, I bartended too. And I was a cocktail waitress and, in college for a little while. I was the only dude working at a place.
That's funny.
In St. Cloud at Legends.
Oh.
At Legends? Yes. Yeah. Okay. Nice. I'm so glad.
It was
glad
terrible. I was so bad, too. I was the slowest, most forgetful.
I was telling you last night that I worked at Target Center as the in charge of the liquor room for the suites.
Oh, terrible idea.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah, so Cuzzy's was, I called it like entrepreneurial boot camp. You know, how can you,
so
quote unquote, keep your cool, be waiting on multiple people, and those multiple people are all across the range. You know, whether it was the breakfast crowd or the lunch crowd or happy hour and dinner crowd, you're always working with someone primarily who's hungry at first, and we're not our best when we're hungry.
Right.
And then we behave ourselves a bit more when we get fed. But then if you're working that really late crowd when people don't know exactly what their limit is, it just makes for a very challenging position. But it was very good for me because I was very shy and timid as a person. I don't consider myself an extrovert. I'm not a fan of speaking in front of crowds of people, but I just keep doing it to just keep getting myself over those
humps. I think I like people always tell me that I'm an extrovert, and I sort of think that like
you're fooling them.
Well, it's like the more, in a way, sort of introverted you feel or something, the more you overcome it by being extroverted or something. I don't know. I don't know how to describe it because it's
fake
not
it
like
you make it.
Yes,
that's what I always say. That's what I do every
it's
day.
It's not like I relish getting up in front of people and talking.
Right? Not
like
at all. But
I'm certainly going
to
do it.
Yeah,
you just have to do it.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It doesn't. It's not something I want to do. It doesn't terrify me to the point where I can't do it or something. But, but some people it does. Like they just cannot get up and do it.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so early days. Waitress at Cuzzy's, I get that, right? Did you go to college and do ceramics or what? Like, how did you get into tile?
I was in college to study psychology because I was told that was, like, the thing to do if I wanted to help people. And what I was interested, which was art, just wasn't something people make a living at. So I was guided not to do that.
Thanks, Mercedes.
People don't make a living at art.
No, no.
Generally.
So just, this is, now mind you, don't feel bad, you guys, but this was in 1995, you know?
Yeah, they still don't make money at art.
Well, I mean, I'm going to So I really, really, really am thankful for the high school art teacher that I had. And I think there's a lot of people that had. Mark Wald, he was at Washburn, he was at South. May he rest in peace. He's passed away since then. But he was a firm believer in disagreeing with that. And that's what I really respect about him. I mean, that's why I joined the board for NEMA, is I truly believe artists can make a living. So I actually disagree with that statement. I am a mentor right now through MCAD's Entrepreneurial Studies courses. And I, you know, like anything, if you want to be a graphic designer, if you want to run a corner store, convenience store, if you want to be a corporate exec, all of them require hard work. I don't know why there's this silly rumor attached to being an artist and not making a living, because I've met several businessy people that, you know, aren't making a living, or they were just laid off at their Target job or whatever. So everything requires organization, everything requires passion. It isn't limited to artists.
No, and we have kind of a running joke about, you know, the foibles of going into art, right? But I completely agree. I think that ultimately, I think it's sad that we've moved away from, like, teaching industrial ed in high school and arts and home ec and all of these things that...
And those aren't in high school would be a surprise to me, because that's what I knew from high school.
Oh, you'd be surprised. Yeah. High school, they've eliminated a lot of that.
Yeah.
And
okay.
I think we do that at our own peril. I think no matter what your job is in the future, no matter what your life is going to be, you learn through immersion into all of these different areas.
Agree.
And no matter what you're doing, you pull from those areas to inform what you do in the other ones. So,
totally.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. But I still like giving him a hard time about art.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is just ongoing.
Well, and
I mean, I see the banter. That's cool.
Yeah. And part of what I love about it is that, you know, for those of you who don't know, my understanding of how Jim got into this was that, like, he really only took one art class in college. And
well, I went to art school.
You went to art school.
MCAD, so.
But it wasn't like you set out with the intent of becoming an oil on canvas artist.
No, not
at
all.
Went to school specifically.
What he's specifically talking about is that I went to MCAD, but I went to MCAD for design, specifically illustration. Mm-hmm. And then after graduation, I just, you know, 3 months, 4 months afterwards, I was like, God, I just really just want to paint. But I didn't take painting classes at MCAD. Well, I took one, you know, but I was a little nervous. I was like, how am I going to make a living? And then here I am. Now we're 100 years later, and I'm, you know, yes, I do have galleries, and I do make money off.
Yeah, and you've had two showings
at the MIA.
The MIA, and that's impressive. Yeah. And,
very impressive.
The art is beautiful that you make. So, I mean, I think it's not that you can't go to school, art school, to be an artist, or you can't set out with the intent of being an artist. It's that if you're an artist, I think you're just going to continue doing what you're doing to get there one way or another. I have a good friend who's an art teacher. Shout out to Amy Conwell here. But she's an art teacher. And, I mean, I can safely say that the students that go through her class, like, she can't help but make you love something about art. It's really, she's very impressive in her love of art.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you did not set out to be a ceramicist.
Never. No, I actually stumbled upon it. So I believe I was in my late into my third year of going to the U of M. So by the time I was really into my second year there, so I had started college early through post-secondary in high school.
Oh, so did I.
Yeah. So my quote-unquote second year of college was really my third year of college. And at that point, I'd realized I was taking one art course. I believe we were on semester systems. To keep me sane. And then just really a light bulb hit. It was, you know, just at the time of my life where I was making decisions versus running decisions through my parents' approval process. Yep. So I just, this light bulb went off and I thought, well, gosh, I'm taking an art class a semester for sanity. Bing, bing, bing. Why don't I just take all art classes? Right. So then for the next year and a half, I was taking all art classes. But honestly, I then again, another insight of like, where are we going with this? And I really wanted to make a living at it, but there wasn't anything in school to bridge that gap with art. It was all about technique.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no shame in that, but no one was speaking about being an entrepreneur or starting a business, right. Which I have a whole opinion about higher education and that kind of thing for another day.
Teaching cons. Yeah.
Relative to
not
the
to, not
price.
To say anything bad about school, but they're teaching you to be a part of the machine, not to build a machine necessarily.
Yeah. And so I actually stopped going to school before I officially completed. And I a lot of times in that day was just making decisions and making a move on it the next day. Sure. Right. So I had stumbled.
That's youth.
I had stumbled upon a local like mom and pop tile shop, and I had just buried my face in a book about Antonio Gaudi and Spain, and I was super interested in this very colorful medium that I'd never really thought about. One of my college roommates had made a mosaic table in our front porch.
Yeah.
She had done it with just, you know, crappy hardware store tile and a hammer, but still it was fascinating to me, like, what is she doing?
Right.
And then I had found this shop here in Northeast Minneapolis, and then it was...
Is that the folks that...
This was Josh at Clay Squared. So it was back when he was on Central Avenue in this old bar.
Who you ran into.
Yeah. With all these like knotty pine walls. But just the shop was filled with amazing tile.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah. So he had his own tile. And I would say like the tile of 15 other tile artists. So it was really cool to see all these different styles.
Yeah.
And I was like, how do I work here? And at that time, I was waitressing. I was in school. And he
Where
had,
did you grow up, by the way?
I grew up in South Minneapolis.
Okay.
Yep.
Washburn.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What part of South Minneapolis, just out of curiosity?
I grew up near Lake Street Kmart, so technically I was in the Roosevelt District.
Yep.
And in junior high, I transitioned from Anderson Open School, which is right by Abbott Northwestern Hospital, over to Ramsey International Fine Arts Center, which is now Justice Page Elementary.
Okay.
I don't know that they have junior high anymore. And because I was at...
That whole landscape is
Ramsey.
Shifted. We're in South Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, and because I was at Ramsey, I believe I was just automatically in at Washburn.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, from the outskirts or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, so...
Sorry, I distracted you there.
No, that's fine. So I was interested in a job at this tile place, but they weren't hiring. This was August. He said, well, maybe during our Christmas rush. And so I had this background in retail, so I thought, oh, wow, okay, they have a Christmas rush. He had me write my information down, and he just, like, there's, like, a big pile of paper on the, like, the bar, AKA the register area, and he just kind of grabbed this pad of Post-its out of a pile, and he had me write my information on this, like, tattered Post-it.
Yeah.
And so I didn't expect to really hear anything until this Christmas rush, right? So, like, a week later, I get a call, like, hey... We'd love to work with you, but the catch was they didn't have any money to hire me with.
Right.
And at that time, I
classic
really
small that business. I mean, if I had a dollar every time I heard that, you know.
Oh, really?
I'd
Would
love
you have
you
a
to,
few dollars in your
I'd
pocket?
Have, I'd have, you know. Maybe $30.
I think they call it interning.
Yeah, I'd love for you to
work now there's paid internships.
With us. I'd love for you to help us out,
but I
can't really pay you.
Right.
Well, at that time, I think I was 20. And wow, to give you context, I'm 41 now. So I was 20. I really didn't have any quote-unquote overhead, nor did I know what that was. And I was really living off of cash tips. Mm-hmm. And my student loans were more than paying for my schooling. I had left over from that. So I just felt like I was rolling. So I was like, hey, you can't pay me?
No big deal, right?
Well, how I looked at it, and I really give myself credit then, but I looked at it of how expensive it was to take art classes at the U. Paying for the credits and paying for the supplies.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'm going to learn a new art form. So I don't have to pay the university for that. And he offered to pay me in supplies, tile. So I was like,
awesome. Hey. That actually
So did you start, yeah, so he paid you in tile. Did you start peddling your own tile, like at a little stand on the corner, down the street or anything?
Not right away. No, I didn't know what on earth I was doing. So the first job that he gave me was actually... this really crappy closet that was just this clusterfuck of whatever. I think it was, he called it a shipping / storage closet / wherever
they were. This was in his workspace?
Yes. Like whenever they didn't know where to put something, it went into this space. So my first job was to organize that.
Oh my God. I was wondering where you were going with this. Like, are you tiling this closet?
No, you're just
pulling all the shit out.
And reorganizing it.
But, oh, God, I love not paying people and making them do the shit that you just don't want to do.
Like, you know, this, like, yeah. You know?
Well, here you go, kid. Do this. I don't think that kids should, you know, get money from their parents just as like a given or whatever. So, as a kid, for me to earn extra cash, I cleaned my neighbor's house, and that was a big challenge. Like, that's a whole nother story right there. So I was already used to taking like craziness and organizing and cleaning it. Yep. And I'm actually really good at being given, whether it's an administrative mess, whether it's a client with super confusing everything, I am really good at organizing. Right? Mm-hmm. Yep. So what he thought would take me like a week or two was just like a couple days. And I was like, what's next? And so he then... I would, you know, basically take little by little things off his plate that weren't necessarily things that he wanted to do. But, you can't run a business as a one-person show. So
no.
I think the best thing, if someone is wanting to work with someone that's running an already going concern, I think it's actually the most successful thing to find out those really low-lying, like, who cares if it's the grunt stuff, but just get those things off the head entrepreneur's plate.
I completely agree.
You're empowering the business to do better. Mm-hmm. And if you can put your ego aside and just understand, you know, those things that aren't on Instagram and those things that people aren't taking photos of and putting on a website and just help get those back end all the mundane stuff operations. That
kills all your time anyway.
Absolutely.
I spend endless amounts of time organizing silly little things that I wish I didn't have to do. But.
Yeah, so it was really like stuff like that. So I felt, you know, fast forward, I worked there for a few years, and I feel proud they hired a few people when I left to do the things that I was doing, and it really gave me a really good insight of like what I was capable of. I think, you know, so I left there when I was 23, and honestly, I wouldn't have taken myself very seriously, much less them, you know, when you have different ideas or whatever. I think it's really important when people are in a business to allow everybody to contribute where the business is headed. Mm-hmm. So that those kinds of restrictions just on like a smaller business like that are what really pushed me to go out on my own, whether I could articulate that at the time or not. Right. You know, I wouldn't but say 23, my 23-year-old like, self would be saying this, but that's what I see because, you know, just fast forwarding to where my business is now, my business couldn't be where it is now if I didn't allow each and every one of my team members to innovate. But there's chaotic innovation where it's like private and corners where we've went through that. Or there's, you know, innovation that's actually smoothly implemented and streamlined, which where I would give us like a B grade on that. So we're going for being an A+, but nothing can happen overnight, right? So you have to grow and develop together, and you got to figure out ways where everyone can have access to the most up-to-date way you make a 3-inch by 6-inch subway tile.
Touching on something that is...
That's what we're in right now.
Well, and you make art.
Yeah.
Right? I think...
We talk about a lot of this. I mean, this is where we collaborate.
The insights I've gleaned over the years of running businesses, and I haven't been terribly financially successful in my businesses, except that, you know, 10, 12, 14 years on, whatever it is, they're still running. People are still getting paid. They're the, you know, producing the livelihood for several different people and all of that. So successful in that, right? Right.
Yeah. Well, here's what I, you know, just to give you credit. I mean, I just read the Magnolia story with Chip and Joanna Gaines, where they're, you know, cutting checks to their vendors before anything took off on TV, asking people to hold checks, you know, honestly, until the last couple of years, like we were up and down on finance, but I can say, you know, I can run into anybody locally at a grocery store and not have this weird thing in the back of my mind that I owe money. Like, were we ever like perfect and timely every year leading up to the last 2 years ago? It was off and on, but did we always satisfy our obligations?
Right.
Absolutely.
Yep.
It's much more expensive not to fulfill your obligations in a timely manner. So I really never want to return back to that place, like paying extra interest or paying late fees or whatever. That was,
it kills you.
So I've been in business, it'll be 17 years in February, but it took us 15 years just to get stable, you know, because every space we'd operate in, you'd go like, in what order do you get the staff? Do you get the staff before you have the business? Oh, shit, now you have the staff. Now you got to get more business. It was always like,
it's a grind. It's just that roller coaster. I mean, I was going to ask you, like, do you remember like one specific, do you remember like a turning point? You know, some people will say, like, I remember getting this job or getting this client. And did you, or is it always sort of like in that 15 years, just like you're kind of there and then you get the next one? And I mean, do you have anything that stands out as far as like, I'm really going to do this?
Yeah, what really stood out is ultimately I did a course with the Small Business Administration. My instructor was Glenn Ford. And he's a fabulous mentor and really just fine-tuning my numbers. So being able to extract myself out of day-to-day and just understanding and also not doing it by myself. So actually, the other person working in my numbers is actually has been a long-term tile maker. So having somebody work in the division of my numbers that understands the production process and also, even like a year prior to that, making a decision to eliminate most, if not all, of my wholesale business, which had the lowest margins, where I was looking at, like, where are we putting the most amount of effort in and where are we getting the least amount of beans back?
Yeah,
and it was really painful because, you know, I had realized a lot of my business was built on these lowest margin clients. Like, these were my, like, bell and whistle clients, so I had to painfully walk away from, you know, what was half of my business to reinvent, really focusing on selling one kitchen at a time at full retail value. But I had to really, I had to make decisions not from like a creative person's point of view, but when I started to distinguish what role I needed to have when I was making decisions, like, okay, I need to make this decision from a business point of view. This isn't from an artistic point of view, but from a business point of view, I need to focus on 40 colors. From an artistic point of view, I definitely have 135 colors that I use. But from a business point of view, we're going to focus on 40 or less because we really want to choose, focus on something so that we understand which colors are easiest to get.
It's like looking at the Chinese restaurant's menu.
Oh,
like,
my
I can't make a decision.
That's a good analogy.
I'll take the 137 or whatever. I don't even know what this is.
The pages and pages.
I noticed the same thing with us. Like I couldn't afford to hire our construction company to do the work that we do, and I feel bad about it in a way. And I like it's taken. I'm still not very good at it, but I have to look at things through, like you say, sort of your business mind, right? And I'm not doing anyone any favors when I am trying to sell my good work at a discount to people. It like it never ends up good for anybody. We don't make any money. I'm stressed out the whole time. And ultimately, people aren't satisfied with the outcome anyway. Like if we charge full price for what we actually do, those the people that get that work are happier. So.
Yeah, I think taking the attention off of myself and really like this year and the decisions that I've made is about having healthcare accessible to my team. So when I make ultimate decisions, even painful, like this year eliminating commission-based sales and knowing that it's going to fall on my shoulders to start sales over, I made the decision based on 30 people and what I wanted to build. And so if it's more about them and less about me, then I'm going to be very likely making a decision as the business owner, not as like, well, I'm a mosaic artist, I need to get back to my individual work. Right. You know, because if I can build a future and a really great place to work for others, well, it's just much more likely for me to be able to make art. And I'm only 41 years old. You know, I know artists in their 70s that are doing some amazing work. So I've really taken this thing that I must have this done by this time. You know, I was really like evaluating myself, like, and really bummed out with myself a few years ago. I had an artist studio and I wasn't using it. And so then it was this waste of money. It was a really fancy storage space for tile. And I found...
We're kind of looking around. If you could just see the studio we're in.
Yeah, why don't you paint a little picture for us, dude?
Yeah, right.
There's a lot of art.
Go ahead, because I think that's important.
Well, it's funny because then I truly did have the space. I did really have time. I did take time, and I was making art. I was like posting on my personal Instagram account about it, but I had to really like be honest with myself. It wasn't. I was like, huh, now I'm not as interested in it. Like I'm so used to like, you know, a dog coming up and, you know, messing around with me, customer calls coming in, emails like, oh my God, this design's got to get figured out. Oh, I got to teach this employee how to figure out this, you know, estimate math, or this employee's loading up these things on the website. I want to help them have the correct things. And, you know, all those things I actually realized I was much more interested now in building this thing than being off on an island. But it's not to say being an artist is being off on an island. This is me and personal to me. It's just I realized,
well, if you build a good company, you should be able to build your
own island.
You should be able to build your way out of needing to run it.
Yeah.
You know, you still have to make decisions, but you should be allowing yourself some freedom in the future.
Yeah.
The hard work today will pay off that way in the future.
But that's interesting. I mean, the same thing is with me, especially once we partnered up a couple years ago, too. I mean, I had a lot of time spent in the studio making art, and kind of that's my passion. But now I enjoy all of the day-to-day activities that we do as a company. I mean, I look forward to it. Same. I don't really miss...
I was kind of shocked.
I don't miss... Yeah, I'm very shocked by it, too. Every once in a while, like... I'll come in here in the weekend, and I'll be like, gosh, I don't miss this, like, every day.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, those really good friends that you have, and maybe, like, a couple years go by, you just pick right up where you left off, and you're not making them wrong for, like, you haven't called me or whatever.
Right.
I feel like that with my mosaic art.
Yeah.
You know, the last piece that I made was really, it was really good, but it was fine.
Like, yeah.
That was wonderful. That really kind of fed the itch. And then
it does.
And then while I was working on that, giving me many more ideas for the enterprise that I was growing. And just I like creating jobs, and I'm really motivated to make them meaningful jobs. And I would say, you know, it's just growing and evolving. That's all for me personally. Everyone's journey is different, and it's personal. It's personal to the person and the journey. It's not going to be the same for everybody.
Right. Was I not, is it the Denver airport? Yeah. Was I not in an airport and I look over and there's a tile mosaic and it says Mercury Mosaics underneath it? Do you have tile in?
Minneapolis St. Paul International Airport.
Okay, it was not in there.
T2. I don't think in Denver, but here's the other thing like that's kind of cool. So yeah. I feel like I could literally go travel somewhere every weekend and go and explore and find our tile, which is really cool. Some of our tile we sell to a general contractor who then a subcontractor puts it in, and we won't know the end job it's going to. We'll even have projects that we sell to that we're not at liberty to say what they are. Or the architect.
Funny.
I mean, if you think about it, if someone's brand is that legacy and they're making a bajillion dollars on it, they don't want just... you're a vendor of theirs, It's just what it is. I had to get over that. 2 years ago, I'd have a whole different opinion.
So like an architect would sort of not reveal the manufacturer of the tile because it's sort of like exclusive to them, is their thinking or something?
No. The architect wouldn't reveal the client because of the client's privacy.
Sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, that makes sense.
So if it's in their private residence or something.
Or if it's going to a corporate headquarters of a really high-profile client. Yeah.
But that's pretty interesting. I mean, that's your sort of, you know, you're letting go of the art. I mean, here it is, you know. I mean,
I would rather let that designer shine. Like, so I decided this a long time ago. So I've just kind of looking at the different areas of my business that I've let go. So I've truly been hands-off on our production process since 2010, just to give you guys that. Like
it's hard to give that stuff up, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really is. I mean, it's like...
Well, yeah.
I went to a job site today, and I'm like, I'm watching the guys do work that I would have done myself, and I'm sort of critiquing it, but at the same time, I just wanted to get the hell out of there because I don't want to get in the way of other
people. You're going to hold it back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, it's... I trust them. They just need to do their work, and if it's not done exactly the way I would do it, it's... They're really capable dudes. They'll get it done.
God, so, it's only been the last couple of years where I feel more comfortable, like, not doing as much, which is something he's been pounding in my head forever. He's like, Jim, you don't need, you know, let someone else paint this or something.
He's building absolutely beautiful cabinetry at a snail's pace.
Painstaking detail.
When I'm like, you realize there's shops where people are like, this is all they do. They have the setup.
And I'd be like, yeah,
well.
But listen, we want this done right. You know, or I want to do it. Yeah. I want, you know, this
and I'm
or
like,
that.
Yeah, and, but those guys actually do it right too. Like they know what they're doing. They're really good at it. Let them do it. Yeah. So I just, you know, you have to manage things. All right, you guys, we are due for a little break here. So we'll take just a couple minutes and we'll be back after our break.
Thank you for listening. I can't believe you've made it halfway through already. I'm sure you can't believe it as well. If you are not a family member of mine or Jim or Sarah's, that's even more impressive that you've stuck with us this long. Don't forget to visit our website, www.andelin.app, or if you're interested in the institutional version, you can always check out kineticlegacy.us, too. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll start with the second half.
We are back. We've got Mercedes Austin, Mercury Mosaics Tile. What do you call yourself? CEO, boss. Owner.
So somebody called me owner, founder, mover, shaker, Miss Melissa Mobley when she was doing some really fun creative with us, and it's just stuck ever since. I believe she gave me that title in like 2011.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've just
and
used
you kind of own it.
Yeah, I own it. Some people call me CEO, some people call me president.
Yeah.
I use those on the correct documents, but really what sticks is owner, founder, mover, shaker.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
I'm ultra Minnesotan, and I grew up sort of rural, but then also we lived in Madison, Wisconsin, so I had a little bit of city time and a little bit of country time. But, man, I hate talking about myself in those terms. Like, I don't like giving, you know, a title just sort of. Yeah, makes me uncomfortable.
I never talk about myself like that.
You're a tech CEO, Jim. Get it through your head. You are a designer, an artist, a tech CEO. What else are you?
I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, so we both get super uncomfortable about it. I don't mind making you uncomfortable about it.
I know you don't. You love doing that. Yeah. I'm just lucky to be alive right now.
I knew you were going to say that.
If you listen to our past episodes, you'll understand that Jim has a real sort of cheery, dark, morbid side. It's like he's always happy, but he's talking about death.
I'm really happy when we do this. Yeah.
I'm really happy to be alive. Yeah. I cross the street and nobody hit me.
That's the way I think, you know?
I know.
But I didn't realize it's so dark sometimes. Well, I mean, when we turn this off, then everyone's like, geez, you know? But, you know.
It's a good dark. It's good dark.
It's a good dark. It's like dark chocolate, you know?
Yeah. It is.
It's dark, but it's just so good.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah,
I like that.
Dark chocolate. Jim.
Everyone loves dark
chocolate. Jim's dark chocolate inside.
Yeah. He's got a little toffee and sea salt on the outside and dark chocolate on the inside.
Oh, goodness gracious.
How many employees do you have right now?
So we've got 30. Yeah. So the other area that I've been out of since 2012 is our mosaic classes.
We're talking about the things that you have learned to
give
up.
Yeah. And you don't just like give them up and run away, right?
You might have to pass them off.
Dip in every so often, and you, in order to quote unquote walk away, you have to have some kind of process. And in these areas, I've talked about two broad ones, obviously. So production, there's a lot of things that have to do with our production. So very elementary process with where we were at in 2010. Our class, though, has really just remained the same. So since 2012, I've been not a part of that, but it's the same structure from creating it in 2010. We've had, honestly, over 10,000 local students through that thing, and it's just simply using our remnant tile and a few different projects. So the only thing that's changed about our class...
Wait a minute now.
Yeah,
did you know we had a class?
I mean, people aren't here with us.
People.
They're listening to this. No one knows what you're saying. What do you mean you have a class?
We have a class. I mean, okay, so let's just... My company started as a one-woman show. I would do classes personally in the early days where you're putting together scraps of tile around a mirror surround.
Mosaics.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. You're breaking up already created. That's right. Yeah. So the root of the
company is
a mosaic artist, right? Mosaics. Yep. So when I incorporated and did mercury mosaics and tile, now you know I was like, shoot, I gotta add the tile thing in there.
Yes. Right.
That's how that rolled.
You can't.
So
just
at some
sell
point, is there
going to
be a rebranding? Yeah. But oh my god, I can't even conceive of.
Yeah, but
rebranding
now
something like
mosaics.
This.
I mean,
I would want to develop the name that I picked in the first place.
Did people give you a hard time over the name?
People give you a hard time no matter what.
Isn't that
How's
funny?
That?
I know.
So, yes.
I know. I love
I've
it.
I've gotten a hard time over everything. I've been told I should sell my company. I've been told I'm not fit to run a business. I've been told I'm just going to be a starving artist. I've been told so many things, but it's
I know it's like just strangers, family. I mean, what about your how has that been?
I mean,
supportive.
I think so. My family, unfortunately, knows me from the beginning. And I say unfortunately because I look back at my younger self and I totally get it. Like, I think with
some
people.
Do you think you were a pain in the ass or what?
I think that I was. I wouldn't say pain in the ass, but I would say. I wouldn't even say entitled. I was like a dramatic spaz. And I was a spoil sport loser.
Mm. Ooh.
And I was always looking at how everyone else's life was. Like, everyone else's,
like,
you know, and the joke is, like, some of my childhood friends, it's kind of been fun over the last decade just getting together with them, and they were, like, always jealous of me. I was jealous of them, and we just laughed about it because everyone's life when I was growing up was so much better than mine, you know, and they were like, well, I wanted this about you, and I was like, oh, haha, that's funny. So, you know, that saying, like, the grass is always greener where you water it, you know, even in, like, working in these artist buildings, everyone in this artist building thinks everyone's stuff is so much better in that artist building and blah, blah. It's the same thing. It's just in a different context.
Human.
It's just a human thing.
Yep.
If you have an Instagram account, you might be like, oh man, this person's Instagram account is so much. Like, you can just make it go on to infinity.
Right.
So just skip it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're saying, that was your childhood. So, but your family was supportive kind of, or?
I think my family really started getting it and seeing it. Like in the last 5 years, but like I don't have a really big extensive family, so like a few people that I'm close to now.
Well, let's go through that.
Yeah,
mom and dad both still around.
My dad has passed away. My mom is not doing so well with her health, but she's always been supportive. Okay. So she's always been like, wow, that's
well,
amazing.
That's sad to hear.
And do they still live in that's South tough Minneapolis?
Both MCAD graduates.
My mom,
my dad ended up being a packaging designer at Shamrock Industries, and then later with Precision and Associates doing plastic injection mold production.
Were they older when they had you? Is that
yes?
So
they were in their late 30s, early 40s, and back in that day was like now it's like normal.
Yeah, that's right. That's like me and my.
Well, that's like my parents were older too.
Yeah,
when they had.
Which
when they
I
got
respect
me.
That because oh my gosh, yeah.
So they're MCAD grads though too.
They are. Yeah, my aunt is an MCAD.
But your father, how long ago did he pass away?
He passed away in 2012.
Okay,
so it's been a bit.
Yep.
Yep.
And your mother is not doing great. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
We don't need to get
deeper
into that in any way, but that's, I hope she's doing all right.
Yeah.
So you grew up, though, in an art family.
I did. So my mom, when I was young, remarried, and my stepfather was a woodworker, and he, just from starting to do small projects on our Queen Anne Victorian home and, like, restoration work, then they just grassroots started doing flyers down up and down Summit Avenue and like Holly Avenue and things like that in St. Paul.
Yep.
He would just get one person here, one person there. So like our basement was his wood shop.
Uh-huh.
So he was like always, he was like a janitor, and he was also this guy making these like prolific designs in wood, but he was always like a one man band.
Yep. A lot of people in that world are.
Yeah. And then you have my aunt who, also a graduate of MCAD, was in advertising. So she started a firm called Fallon McElliott Rice.
Okay. You're kidding me.
That sounds...
Well...
What's
her name?
Nancy Rice.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's my my mom's kid sister. So that's who's brought me in at MCAD. So I never want to like be given favors because of family. So her and I really just started getting to know each other the last few years.
Do you have some connection to that?
Well, I mean, everyone knows her.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He always knows.
So I mean, that's a huge
company. She means business. I remember, so this is a great example.
You got a pretty serious bent to yourself, though, too. Like, you're
all
businessy.
Yeah.
Well, no, I remember, this is a great example of me as a 20-year-old. You know, I thought I could just call up my aunt, who's like this big-time advertising lady in Chicago at the time, and like, my aunt will just hook me up. And her response to me was like, well, how do you face deadlines and how do you do with rejection and working on teams? And I was like,
don't ask me questions.
I was like, what? But I tell her now, I'm like, I'm really glad you were really hard on me and gave me zero favors. But I was kind of pissed about it for a while. But thank you, because like, you know, I also read Damon John's Power Broke. Like, I think for a while I was just pissed at like not having any benefits from my parents or family growing up. And actually I realized that's what's made me, because I've had to figure.
Yeah, you're driven.
I've had to figure things out from nothing, you know, like no resources, started this whole thing from the ground. And so like with this whole working with my aunt, being a mentor in the entrepreneurial studies at MCAD, and like, it's not because she's my aunt. Like, she's literally seen me grow this thing from scratch and genuinely feels that I have something to contribute.
I'm in awe of your business. I mean, I think it's, you know, I don't know a lot about it, but I don't think that would be an easy thing to do, to build a
It's impressive. I mean, you have a real presence here now in Minneapolis. I mean, and a lot of people are using your products, and you know, it is impressive.
I think it's just sort of classic determination.
It is. I was going to say,
all
you know,
of the things that make a business go.
I'm on the alumni board at MCAD, and we were just having a meeting recently, and part of where I think, you know, as an artist, as you are an artist and went to school and took art classes and that, it's the, you know, what makes a good artist is that able to be the adaptability. You know, that's really what it comes down to, being able to acclimate, you know, to different environments and different situations and be able to adapt. I mean, if one, like you're saying, like if, you know, both of us are saying, you know, here we are in art studios, you know, and maybe this isn't working, so you have to adapt. You know, you can't hold on to things
forever.
And it
doesn't mean you've failed. I mean,
no,
I'm
not at all.
On
oh, my
sixth
God.
Business
and
model.
The best.
That's the goal, is to be able to adapt.
There
and
is
recognize
no failure.
Things.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, failure is not doing something. Like, that's not taking the risk. is the biggest failure.
Fast and learn from it. One of my mentors, Johnny Cupcakes, super prolific guy. Yeah, sell cupcakes, doesn't even have a bakery, but he has really clever graphic design t-shirts, and he does talks to entrepreneurs.
Is he local too?
Boston. But okay. He'll travel around the U.S. and I'll send you a link. He's just brilliant, full of energy, runs it with his family, and just incredibly cool story, but just talks about failing fast and learning from it. Rather fail fast than fail really slow. And it's not like the goal is to fail, but just get back up and keep going.
I mean,
and
I don't
figure
know
out
that,
what
didn't
work.
And that's what
I don't
makes
know
that I've a ever... successful artist, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how you can actually make money, you know, through it is to be able to, you know, recognize those things and keep taking risks. And
yeah, I don't think I've ever looked at anything that I've done that ended up being kind of a mistake as a failure. Like, I just don't think of it in those terms. I always think like, oh, well, that was good that I learned that now so that I can move on to the next thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
Yeah, because like a good failure. So this whole local class and, you know, having our remnant tile be the supply chain
back
for
to this
it.
Class thing. So you have kids coming through? Like, how old are is it just about anyone?
Just about anyone. I mean, I had at the time my niece's Girl Scout crew. They're like 10-year-olds. But I always say, you know, the adults actually think the longest and hardest about what they're going to make in mosaics. You know, sometimes they could show up with this master plan, but we're you know, this is a 3-hour class.
So does this take place? Once a week?
Nowadays, it's 2 Saturdays a month.
Okay.
And it's occasionally on a weekday night. Uh-huh. So we've started occasionally having mosaics with a little cocktail with Tattersall.
Yeah.
And then on the weekends, it's a, don't quote me, but I believe it's, if it's not 10 a.m. to 1, 10:30 to 1:30, in that zone. We have a calendar on our website. We have, up to 15 students.
Okay, well, we can go ahead we've talked a lot about the tile and stuff. We can go ahead and do a little plug. What is the website?
Oh, it's mercurymosaics.com.
That's very simple, very straightforward.
Yep, if you scroll all the way down and you want to look at classes, it's on the resources on the bottom of the page. Yeah.
And Tattersall is a distillery that's sort of connected to your building, sort of.
It's in the same building,
Yeah, right? It's in that, vortex.
That's a really cool building.
I'm in a vortex, basically. It takes up 7 acres of land. It has 2 physical addresses to it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's you get super lost confusing. Walking around in there.
There's it's a giant maze.
Just started.
What was
doing
that building?
So it used to be manufacturing for Thorpe fireproof doors.
Oh, of course.
That whole building?
Yes. And then it was General Mills headquarters and the 1620 building, the one that kind of has this 70s. Vibe clad in granite or whatever we want to call that on the front. And then during World War II, everyone was switching over their operations to do something for the war. This building became one of the most heavily guarded buildings in the United States of America, guarded by the CIA and FBI. And there is a guard tower outside of my tile factory where somebody with a machine gun stood. Yep. And it was home of the top secret black box operation. You can actually read about it on
here
Wikipedia.
In Minnesota, northeast
Minnesota. I think there's a lot of things going on in Minnesota that are low key, but we're one of the best kept secrets.
Pretty proud of Minnesota these days.
We're a thing.
I went and
but we don't want everyone to know that because we don't want the traffic.
Listen,
to
it's way too
or the
cold.
Rent to go up.
It's people aren't going to move here. It is so cold in the winter. Really super cold.
Yeah, it's so cold. You don't want to live here, but definitely come visit.
Yeah,
and
come say hi.
Buy some tile.
Visit studios.
So
get some art.
Buy art.
We
create a legacy.
Yeah, we haven't done very much about talking about this legacy stuff, but which is fine, right? But everyone knows.
Well, we've talked about your legacy.
Yeah,
really.
That's the important part.
This is what it's about.
But even
getting your story told.
And the app that we're building, Andolin, and the related things, and we're not going to talk about all of that stuff. But
let's just hear about the name Andolin. Where does that come from?
It's my daughter's name. So
wow. And in what nationality or what
Andolin,
does it come
so
from?
Okay, I'll give the full history. Mm-hmm. Right? I've got 3 children. Mm-hmm. The eldest 2 are boys. Mm-hmm. They're 11 and 9. When I was married, I took my wife's last name because she's the death of her lineage. She's the last of her line. So I figure I've got all sorts of brothers and sisters, and there's a lot of Thiessens running around. So I took...
Do you say it divine?
It hurt. Yep, divine.
Divine.
Yep.
I mean, who wouldn't take that?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't Floppenschmuller or something. You know, like, if it had been a really weird name that needed to die, I probably would have let it die.
Divine is pretty nice.
Divine is a good name. And,
it is.
And she's got a great family, and they're, you know, they're very good people, so there's no good reason to let the name die. So I took her name, and then we had our firstborn, a boy, carrying the name on. That's great. But she suggested that we name him, give him... his first name be my former last name, which is Thiessen.
Cool.
So, yeah, it was, I mean, at first for me, it was a little difficult because, you know, just, it wasn't difficult. Name. Yeah, but I also had worked at a boys' camp for 15 years, and everybody at that boys' camp called me Thiessen.
Of course. So, yeah, I have friends I call by their last name. Yep. It's kind of this camaraderie thing. Yeah.
Yep. So, and, you know, when you work at a place where there's three Sams running around, you just adopt last names.
Absolutely.
So I was Thiessen all the time. And it's... served him really well. Then the second boy came along, and we needed another surname that could be used as a first name. So I tell Maddox the story that I wandered the earth. I visited every country just meeting people until I found the right name, which is not true, of course. Sorry, Maddox. So Maddox is a Welsh surname that can be used as a first name. So when the third child comes along and it's a baby girl, again, I needed a surname that could be used as a first name and for a girl, and that's tough. So I watched movie credits because it's name rich, you know, and I just kept watching the credits. The names until fly by Andelin.
Until Andelin, something like really hit.
Andelin popped up and I'm like, Andelin, that's it. So that's her
awesome.
Name. And then when it came to naming our app, you know, it's a legacy app, so we had originally thought legacy,
right.
But it's so heavily copyrighted and used that we couldn't do it. So
Andelin, something that just also just flowed, and it kind of humanizes the app too, to actually call it a person's name, and then it's your daughter.
Yeah.
So it just sort of
it
is
worked.
Light. It's, you know.
It's cool.
Plus,
you know. Yeah.
And the boys know this. She's my favorite. I mean,
she's
so cute. She's
she
a little girl.
Like, she comes
she?
In here quite
two.
A bit.
Just a little over
you
two.
You have a two-year-old.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And she is
okay.
A really sweet child. Like, she's super easy to be around because she's fun and happy. And she's got her older brothers. I mean, mm-hmm. She just adores her brothers. And they
I
take
bet.
Such good care of her. And,
that's cool.
Yeah.
So when I met you, you had a one-year-old. Wow.
Yep. Yeah, and that's...
Wait, was that the child being carried around when you guys were working
yeah,
with David?
It was. Yeah. Oh, that's
so that
right.
was when we first moved in.
Yeah.
She wasn't even one yet.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. She was in... She,
okay.
You came in with the...
That's little, right.
Because,
yeah, I brought her everywhere with me.
Right, because Hope was here with us. We,
yes.
we had
yeah.
a meeting with you, actually, and
yeah.
she came in the...
Yeah, I've got photo evidence of that too.
Right.
Yeah.
But so the
oh,
so the
cool.
idea with the
yeah.
app is that, you know, if you look at kind of the social media landscape right now, everything looks forward. Like Instagram, Facebook, they all are projecting everything moving forward.
Very linear.
Yeah, put your things here, and then they're kind of gone. They just fade off in the distance behind you. If you try and like look back at your life through Instagram or Facebook, it's a jumbled mess. So Andelin is there's a couple of things it does. It gives you a place to house the things that you, of your past that are important to you. So that's your legacy part of it. And the other thing that it does, so we draw on connections between person, place, thing, and event, but the app gives you the opportunity to tell the story, the history, the lineage of things in your life, whether it's a place that you lived, a person that you knew in the past that's maybe not with us anymore, objects that you've carried through your life, heerloom objects, or
maybe
even
things
that I you
just
know, I already told
mean.
One story, but I'm going to tell another story really quick.
Yeah.
It's not going to be quick. My little sister, one of my sisters moved
How
up.
Many sisters do you have?
Let's see. I have, three.
And then do you have any brothers?
Yeah, I have a bunch of those.
How many of those do you have?
Four.
Seven of you guys?
Yeah, eight total.
Eight?
Well, so my folks are divorced.
Yeah.
There's my older brother and I.
There's a whole group of them.
Yeah, I can't even keep track of it. So there's my older brother and I, and then my mother was remarried and had two more boys, and my father was remarried, had two girls and a boy, then divorced again, remarried recently to a friend of mine.
Now he's got a new sister.
And I've got a five-year-old sister. So
cool.
Yeah.
So first of all, this app needs to be used by your family and all their family members. Like, seriously, that would be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think even describing something as an app, like saying we're building an app, it's sort of, in some way, it kind of cheapens it. Like, people are like, we know the power and importance of some apps, but people are making so many apps that are so crappy. That
Well, there's so many businesses too, right?
Yes. It's an app, but ultimately, it's a, you know,
it's a tool.
It's a tool that goes on your phone, and your phone has a really fantastic camera. You can take videos. It geolocates things. It's a computer. It does all those other things. Yeah. So it's a really robust digital scrapbook that, or library or whatever, for that houses the legacy of your life.
So it's a little bit like a scrapbook, a little bit like Ancestry.com, a little bit like
and places.
StoryCorps.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of a combination of those things. It's... So my
younger
sister,
who's now, you know, 30 and or 32 or something, has kids or a child. But she moves up to Alaska a few years ago, and she married a guy, and, you know, we love him, Jason. But Telsha's up in Alaska, and she comes down here and she fills a really crappy, like 1987 or something, cargo van full of stuff. And then she says, I need someone to drive it to Alaska. And
I know this story.
Yeah. And of course, I'm like, well, I'm the guy for that. So I drove it up to Alaska. And I get stopped at the border into Canada. I get stopped at the American border on the other side. Both places are like, what do you have here, sir? And it's like absolutely packed full of stuff. And then they built a wooden box on top that's packed with stuff.
And is there any rust on this van?
Oh, the whole thing. Oh, there's hardly any metal
red
left.
Flags. Okay.
Yeah. Right. I mean, everything about it looks like this guy needs to be pulled over
at
the border, and you need to take every item in this van out and search through it for drugs and weird stuff. And I hadn't thought of that part of it. So I pull up to the border crossing, and I look at the border guard, and, you know, he's like...
You instantly probably thought, like, oh, geez.
I mean, as I'm pulling up to the queue or whatever, I'm thinking, oh no, they're going to detain me, and I don't have any idea what's in here, and they're going to take everything out, and then I'm going to have to repack it, because they don't repack it for you, you know? Mm-hmm. So I pull up, and the guy
You're
goes...
You're a two-hour cycle for them.
Oh, my God. So I pull up to the border, and I look at the guy, and he's like, so, how you doing today, sir? You know, good. What have you got in the van? I have no clue. Like, I really don't know what's in here. It's all my sister's stuff. I think it's mostly like clothes and childhood memorabilia, I don't know, stuff. And he's
all the kinda, shit she wants to save.
Yeah. And she and the guy kind of laughs at me, and he's like, all right, see you later. You know, and sends me through. And I thought, oh, this is great. And then 4 days later, I'm at the American border coming back into Alaska. And same thing. I'm like, oh, God, I didn't think about the second time I'm going to have to do this. And they're for sure going to pull me over. And they didn't, of course. So same thing. Like, okay, cool. Have a nice day. Drive another day or two, get to my sister's place, and, you know, she comes out, she greets us, and all super excited that we're there, and then she goes into the van, and she starts pulling out stuff, and I swear to God, it cost $3,000 to drive that thing up there. It took a week of my life. I loved every minute of it, because I got to drive to Alaska. She pulled out, there was probably $50 worth of crap in the van. It's all these old things that had sentimental value to her but aren't worth anything. They're just scraps and pieces. But that's sort of like the Andelin app. That's kind of what it's all about. Is I can't tell you why something that I've carried with me all my life means something to me in the way it does, but it does.
Yeah.
You know?
Of course. Yeah. And if you add value to things.
Yep. And if you can document that, put it into the thing, then like if your kids are wondering, like, why did my dad want me to keep this
thing that now lives in our house and we don't know what to do with it, you know?
Yeah, what's the story behind it, and why was it so important? to that person. So that's, I love that part of it. I like telling the story of things. So
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's what we do.
It's a good job as a big brother.
Oh, I'd do anything for them. I mean, I love my little sisters.
That's awesome.
Yeah. They are wonderful people. And, you know, so now we have, I have Teason, Maddox, and Andolin, right? And my, oh God, I'm going to screw it up, but my siblings, there's Manu, Sorsha, Antoinette, Lyra, Cicely. Like, my family, we didn't collaborate. You guys collaborate.
Are really into the names.
Yeah, you? We didn't collaborate on this. It's, but somewhere along the line, someone inserted the idea that we had to come up with different names
for all of them. If you say that really fast, it'll sound like a language.
Yeah, it is like a foreign language.
Like a different language.
Yeah.
Very unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, and I know there's more of them out there. I don't remember all the names. I'm terrible. But anyway, so, well, we have blown through another half hour, and I think if you guys are cool, we'll do another one after this just for fun, and we'll get to know a little bit more about Mercedes. So,
rock on.
All right. All right, this episode is going so well that we decided we needed a third segment. Don't forget to check us out. Well, actually, just download the Andolin app, if you would. That'll be out soon. Or check us out at andolin.app or kineticlegacy.us if you're into that sort of stuff. All right, we'll get back to it. Back for the third set here, which is good. It doesn't really matter.
Don't sound too excited. We're back for the third.
I know. Set. I know. We have this. The last episode. I mean, Jim and Sarah were sleeping. They were sleeping on the table as I was talking.
Yeah, Sarah and I were just like, Sam, we're done.
We don't have anything to talk about, so I can see how. You know, we'll be falling asleep in a second here. It's just like nothing.
Well,
to talk
we
about.
Were just talking about Art of World, actually.
We were talking about
you are on the board.
I'm on the board of NEMA.
Yep. Yep.
I sold my very first piece of art. So, you know, you asked me, like, did you, like, set up your stuff on the weekends or what have you when I was early on as an artist, right, at this mom and pop shop. So Art of World was the very first venue where I sold something. And I'll never forget it to this day that I made something. And I priced it. At that time, we call it arbitrary gut check pricing.
Yep.
And you come up with just like a random number, not based on anything. And someone actually bought something that I make. And I know that sounds like such a simple whatever thing, but I just remember how that felt when someone purchased something that I made. Yeah, yeah. I was like, somebody likes my stuff.
This is going to go live somewhere in someone's house.
Yeah. So I'll just always remember that. It was a game changer. And I always remember, too, the first time I got a commission. You know, it was someone actually sought out having me make something. And I just remember feeling a bit different about myself. I feel like, you know, you can have your own perspective about yourself. And the people that you surround yourself with and the things that you strive toward also help shape you. So if you reinforce, like, I want to work and collaborate with other people on commissions, you know, honestly, I think that's been the most successful thing for me as a creative person is I don't just have my own perspective to develop things. I have my internal team, but like the perspective of our customers and getting their insight and shaping what we do, like it's phenomenal.
Yeah,
but it's
cool.
You know, it's, you know, a lot of human psychology and all that kind of stuff. So if you can make it through all those bumps and edges and build something competently with a client, it's a pretty proud moment.
Yeah. I mean, we do that with our construction stuff.
Sure.
We collaborate. We're
design build is like intense.
Yeah. And it's, that's something we're absolutely into is the collaboration, but it can be, it works both ways. It can be taxing sometimes too, because
you have to come up with boundaries. So I really, in the beginning of our customization, I'd allow people to customize while we were fabricating it. So that is, we don't do that. So I make it really clear when we design something, certainly we're only 80% of the way there because it's a design on paper. There's samples to go with it. And then when we lay out this custom design and we allow the customer to approve it, there can be a few tweaks here and there, but the goal in design is to design it well enough so the client understands what they have, so that if there's more than minor changes at that layout process where they're actually approving it, then we consider it a brand new job.
Yeah, right.
And that was kind of painful the first, you know, because we're Minnesotans and we're really right. super nice, but when you think about scale and doing repetitive things and having multiple jobs occurring, that became a very important part of our process when we're doing
the
custom.
Boundaries are really important.
Boundaries are really important.
I remember, like, you know, having projects and having the client come in and then the constant changing, and then you're kind of building it and you're kind of like, well, can we just make this a little bit wider, or, you know, however that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I mean, I was a counselor at a boys camp for 15 years and I feel like I've been a counselor at construction for 15 years too. Like the amount of time that I have to spend like walking people through, it's not, I don't dislike it. It's just that it is taxing. There is a toll it takes on you to have to sort of manage people's emotional state over the choices that they make when they're buying tile or, you know, something, these expensive things that they have to make a choice and they put it in their house. And it's not really my choice. I can guide them to certain things, but you have to choose what you want and then we'll put it in. And there's a lot of emotion in that.
That's really difficult for people to choose what they want.
There's, yeah, and, you know, buyer's remorse is real. People,
yeah.
People, I mean, spend a lot of money choices. And they... Almost inevitably, we will get hired by people. They'll meet five different designer teams or, you know, construction company teams. They'll pick us. When they pick us, they're very happy with us for a while. They love going through the design process. We get that done. We demo things. We start. Then there's a period of time in the middle of the project where they dislike us for a while. You can just sort of feel the tension building. And then... right at the very end, they're super happy again for a little while, and then they almost always abandon us for about 6 months where they're not happy with us because now they've written the last check, and but then they live with all of the stuff that we did, and then they come back, and they're like, oh my God, I love it all so much. You know, it's just
and
sort
it really
of the cycle.
Wasn't that hard.
No, but you understand, like, you're putting them in the position of, like, we're destroying your home for 6 months. Of course you hate me, you know?
Which we do.
Yeah. And maybe it's a different relationship. I don't remember the last name of this current woman client you brought in, but they're not living on the job site.
That's
so I'd imagine
correct.
That makes a big difference.
Oh, it's really nice. Except for they're dying to get in the house.
Who
I
isn't?
Mean,
I know.
So they're just like...
Have you ever had that not be a thing?
No, I have had... Some people are able to live in sort of those chaotic situations more gracefully, I think, or whatever, than others, you know, but generally speaking, no, everyone hates having their house torn apart and their life upended like that.
Yeah, and you know, I can't imagine, like, your guys' job is so intense. You know, I remember that one residence we worked on with you guys and we were a week behind one of our deliverables. So I can only imagine if that translates over five vendors, like how you guys have to manage through all that. I chose tile specifically because it was one thing.
So
in the scope of a huge project.
Yeah, we're dealing with that right now.
You're dealing with, like, you've got to get the plumbing in, the electrical in, the inspections in, just to close the wall.
I know.
You guys have so many steps.
Insulation.
It's a lot. And depending on the geographic zone you're in, you have different rules you have to play by. And so
different municipalities.
I'm not trying to be a downer. I don't envy your job. So I like to, like, how we've kind of risen up is to make sure, like, we're as quick as possible, make it as easy as possible because
you guys
of all
have a nice
the
process.
Other crazy moving parts that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
That may, like, I don't know how swift permitting processes are. And it depends on who the inspector is.
I mean, you can go in, you know, like a year ago, you go in and the permit, the inspection, all of it happens in a day. Then they get busy and they're like, oh, it's going to be 2 weeks. Like, it changes. It's an ever changing process.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then one thing back. I mean, like you're saying, everything backs up then. And...
Yeah. And I don't dislike construction. I enjoy it all. For me, there's no real emotion in it. I kind of know it's hard to explain to people. I know when I look at your project, I know that there's 4 weeks worth of work there, but it's going to happen over the course of 9 weeks. And that's because of all of these delays that get built in different ways.
Yeah.
Or it's 6 months worth of work, but it's going to it's going to take 8 months to complete.
Yep.
And people have, you know, this sort of urgency, and it's normal, but they think that, like, well, if I were managing this, this problem wouldn't have happened, or these people would have done this. And it's like, well, actually, like, we're really good at this. And if you put the timeline up against most any contractor, it's always going to end up being about the same. Like, anyone who's good at it, they all deal with the same problems. They all deal with the same people. The process is pretty much the same. So some just look more organized and some less organized. And I'm so laid back, and Jim's so laid back, that people are always like, well, you guys clearly aren't working. Like, well, we are.
We don't get stressed too easy. Yeah. Not anymore. Yeah. I used to, but not anymore.
Yeah, like, we're going to build a great kitchen in our factory, and my concept is any of the lead time items, to have them arrived and set aside in our shipping storage area before the actual work begins, to, like, have as many of those lead time items, including our tile, on site, so that the things that we don't have control over, like the labor and when you open up the wall and those kinds of things, Perfect. That those aren't the things we're worrying about, but we're handling structural things, which in my estimation are the can of worms that you don't know until
you don't know.
Generally speaking, people worry about, oh my gosh, when we open this up, are we going to find something major? It's almost always easily correctable.
Yeah.
And you know, we don't stress over those things anymore either. You open up a wall and you find out that someone did something wrong 50 years ago and you fix it.
Right.
And it's all fine.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, get your faucets on site.
Yeah, it's
get
just any wood of the base and metal
that
and
you can, the flooring elements, have them.
Yeah, and then just
arrive.
Yeah.
The countertop fabrication is a lead time item that you can't have sitting around. So.
Nope.
Those
things matter.
Yep.
So what else have we got to talk about here? What I mean, we've been talking business.
What are we talking
lots
about?
Lots and lots
what
of
else
business.
Do we have to talk, or do we?
I'm kind of, do you have siblings?
I have one older brother.
Okay.
Yep.
How much older?
Crystal, right?
So he lives in Brooklyn Park. Where he works is out of Crystal.
Right.
He's a genius mechanic / engineer. He works on luxury speedboats, formerly snowmobiles, but his dealership stopped, like, servicing snowmobiles. I don't remember the exacts. He's, I think, from the age of 3, has been an inventor and problem solver and likes to build things. And so he's got a very well-run shop that it's like his baby that he's grown forever. So, like, the cleanest, what I appreciate, how he set up systems. So, like, when they do oil changes, like, each station has it coming in from the ceiling. He's got air compressors that come down from
That's
the ceiling.
Cool.
Like, he's,
God, I do
he engineers
like
every
really
square.
Well-organized shop.
He's got a really well-organized shop.
I love
shop.
That stuff.
Yeah, and really well-organized toolboxes. So,
I also love the ones that are, like the old guy that's just a mechanic out of
and
his garage,
just
and it's just
greasy,
and there's
hell.
Stuff everywhere, and you're like, how do you do this? It wouldn't be the way I would want it to be. Yeah. But then they're like, oh, well, right over there is my part that I need for this. They know it
I
all.
I kind of like both of those, too.
I do, yeah. I'd rather spend time in the well-organized shop.
Yeah.
Makes you feel better.
So, Mercedes, what do you do for fun?
Well,
I mean, because you're pretty busy.
Yeah, so I...
What's your weekends look like?
I love going out to eat. Minneapolis, St. Paul, God. Twin Cities area. So many great places. Mm-hmm. And
finally.
Honestly, yeah.
In our youth, it wasn't that way. We have great stuff here now.
Lat 14 is a recent place that I tried. Coincidentally, a lot of the places that I check out might have Mercury Mosaics tile at them.
Oh,
yeah.
When I travel, might go to destinations that
are you
might
obnoxious
have...
about it? Like,
no,
do you go in
actually,
and you're
my husband is, and I'm like, shh, don't say. He's like, no, I'm going to say something. You know, like, we just tried out brunch at the Lynn Hall, and we did a great lettering custom mosaic out front. He's like, I'm going to tell her. I'm like, she's ringing up our breakfast. I don't think you need to. He's like, no, I'm going to tell her. I'm going to tell her you guys did it. But I I like going around and seeing where our tile ends up, because I think I can't take it for granted to this day, like, that, you know, our stuff ends up in places that I might even discover because we didn't realize who the end user was, or it was for this hotel.
I'm so interested, like, even with our construction stuff, I'm so interested in putting out a product and seeing where that product goes, because we've always put out a service, and there's just all this stuff, but this app and kind of even our construction stuff, we want to, in the future, be more of our own client and put out a product that then sells, you know, like, do the construction for ourselves and then put it out as a thing. I kind of, like, I appreciate you sell your tile, you put it out into the world.
And I'll go and, like, co-work, like Northern Coffee Works. I'll go work there for an afternoon and eat lunch there. Like, that's, it's actually one of my favorite things to do. I like exploring the environments that our tile ends up in, and just, like, understanding the culture out there. Right. I do weekend trips just to check it out. Like, you might find me in different seminars, just learning. I'm always working on my business, but it's not in a way of this obsessive compulsive, I have to, it's struggling, but just, it just keeps inviting me in different layers to understand it and grow it. Cause I'm building a legacy. I really understand where I'm going. Like, I'm building multiple factories. I'm creating dedicated production lines for specific shapes. I'm going to be creating jobs in rural areas. And
That's right. Was it Wadena?
Yeah. Wadena, Minnesota.
Right. We talked about this.
Yep. We're figuring out the numbers for the factory right now.
Lived in Perham, which is right next to Wadena. Mm-hmm. So what is the status of that right now?
Well, so this all was born out of doing a mini MBA and finishing it last fall. Mm-hmm. And my class project, it was a 9-month process.
Okay.
So it's through the Small Business Administration. It's called the Streetwise Mini MBA. And what I appreciated about it is the word Streetwise was in it, but it was a class full of people already running a business. Because So I appreciated that we were all able to use our business as our own practical. And I like creating projects around something that I'm already working on or that I would like to be working on. And I just remember my instructor, Glenn, when I had shown him my first draft of my plan. Have you guys ever, like, made a to-do list and then you add a few items on there that you've really already done just so you can, like, check a couple things off? Have you ever done that?
Well, we do it all the time.
No.
Well, kind of.
I
don't think so.
You just did it the other day.
It just wouldn't work with my sensibilities. Like, I would never think of that. I would never think to do that.
Okay, so Jim can relate to
that. Yeah, I understand the concept. I've never heard anyone describe it before.
Well, so my final project included one project I was already working on, but it wasn't done. You preloaded
yourself a success. I like it.
Yeah, but what he said, he actually kicked the project back to me. He's like, you're not thinking big enough.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, damn it. You know, so I had to come up with something that I was a bit, like, you know, anything big kind of makes you nervous. You're not, like, reckless, but so I just thought I want to actually be able to make tile overseas.
Right.
You wouldn't believe, like,
that's a tough.
So just the problem that I'm looking at is, you know, the U.S., like, we take in goods from everywhere. It seems like it's a rather easy route. Like, we buy things here that are made in all sorts of places around the world. Wouldn't believe the hardship it is to take things from this country
and
export them somewhere else. You know, like, we do sell and ship tile all around the world, but it's not as much to an individual, which I do think needs to change, you know. Right. So by the time they pay for the transit fees for our tile to go in their country, to charge them the taxes, that stuff, once it lands, it's rather unapproachable. So to get ready to be manufacturing tile in specific countries, because that's already being done by all the big dogs out there.
Right.
You know, I only can reference 3M at this moment. You're going to be a
multinational.
So I was like, well, I want to get that. How do you create tile in a different facility? How do you have a second facility? Like, I really admire businesses that have more than one location. Like, how do you do that? So you first have to create the demand for something. So this really started back in August of 2015 when I began focusing just on three shapes: Moroccan fish scales, subway tiles, and diamonds.
Yeah.
I've been focusing on those now for over 3 years. We can do plenty of shapes, but I really wanted to just focus.
Yep.
So creating a high enough demand for those then necessitated me looking at how I could give them their own dedicated production line. So for this project, the project was to create a second factory. And so the final project, I presented it to a group full of community developers, and lo and behold, 60 of them were interested. They all talked to me after the presentation, and there was even a presentation by Able Brewery, like they're outgrowing their space. Yep. You've heard of Johnny Pops.
And this was all up in Wadena?
No.
No, this is locally, right? Yeah.
This is all here in the Twin Cities. But like Johnny Pops is a great example. Have you had their natural popsicles?
No, I've heard of them.
You've heard of them?
Yep.
So they produce their popsicles in a rural area now too.
Okay.
Well, I'm not a popsicle.
No,
maybe your children would enjoy these popsicles. I enjoy.
No, I just can't remember the last time I had a popsicle.
So that's the point. They're actually savory, low sugar. They're not like pops.
Right.
Just try Johnny Pops.
Okay, will do.
So anyway, they're a client of this firm that I'm working with. So we put out a call, basically, like a request for proposals. Who's interested in a Mercury Mosaics factory in your area? So we had 16 rural communities apply and propose why we should put a factory in their community.
Cool.
So we narrowed it down to 3. So this first quarter of this year, we visited each one. Mm-hmm. Second quarter, we chose the one that was the best fit. Third quarter, we started exploring the numbers that would take from a ballpark point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So in this fourth quarter, we're actually putting together a budget based on real life. You know, so we're getting down into all the details specific to a space, creating the floor plan. So we don't have a timeline in 2019 when to execute this, but we will have the numbers by first quarter of 2019 so that we can make plans. So the first milestone in this year is to finish the year off with healthcare available to my base, to my factory now. So yep. Creating leaders in this community that I'm working with now to be able to have a second community that we're working with. So we would hire from the Wadena area and surrounding area, but we would have a few of our own as a leadership there. So sales would all come out of, you know, headquarters, but that would be dedicated to manufacturing Subway tile, Moroccan fish.
Well, skins. And this gets you a start at having two facilities. So if you're going to do it in another country, this will give you an idea at least of...
That'd be way too steep a gradient, like because you have like all these cultural differences or whatever. So the first... For me, I think the biggest hurdle will be like maintaining the culture that we've created here in a space that's 3 hours away. Mm-hmm. So I would do that a few times very close in the Twin Cities to just also, it will help us with the best control that we can have actually
Who's
scale.
Helping you with all this?
I mean...
Like, do you make most of all of these choices and decisions yourself? Is this
Are you driving up to Wadena by yourself, or who's with
no,
you?
No, yeah. So the last Wadena
trip... Do you have, like, a
trip,
business team?
So I have a team of executives. I have a very competent team of managers. While I was in Italy at the world's largest trade show, one of my co-pilots running the company with me was in Wadena, meeting with contractors, meeting with, you know, electricians, plumbers, etc. Whereas, like, I went to the first... Wadena visit where the mayor was at, you know, and the chief of fire, who's also the city council, who's also,
I love
the, you
those
know,
small
right?
towns.
Yeah.
The fact that you're in Wadena.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so cool.
Yeah. So we're not in, I always say nothing's final till it's final,
right?
But that's our pick. And so now we have to basically understand what all these numbers are before we take anything on, you know, just, I'm very new to understanding, okay, what are the benefits of being a business in Minneapolis versus being in a rural Minnesota area? Oh, wow, the tax structure is differently.
Right.
Okay, great. Are we going to have to set up as a separate company, you know, just for accounting purposes out there? Like, we're all in that process, right? So we're leaning on, we have a very great professional tax accountant that we work with. You know, I have business advisors, but realistically, there's a core of 5 of us in my company that make many of the decisions. And yes, to answer your question, I am the crazy, you know, guy behind the curtain running all these ideas. So I do know the difference between like a great idea that should be kept in an idea book and a great idea that'll help bring us to the next level, you know, and just,
yeah, we kind of talked about that earlier. I didn't really get it out, but I think that like running a company, that's sort of one of your main functions is to think, okay, if I make this decision now, that's going to get us to where we need to be 3 years down the road. And most people, like, that's a hard way to think. But
it's
you have
really
to.
It's a really hard way to think. I mean, and you have a strong vision. I mean, you really do. A clear, you know.
Yeah, you have to have started a business and to run it. It's, I mean, I can't kind of say it enough, but it's very impressive that you are doing this. Are you part of, like, you know, do you, because you're a woman, you know this about yourself, right? Do you, are you part of any sort of like female entrepreneur things? Like, does that impress you that you, like, is this something that you're proud of, the fact that you're a woman, or do you just think I'm another business owner and that's all I want to be looked at it, you know?
So primarily I simply looked at myself as I'm an entrepreneur. However, yeah, recently I've started seeing and looking at statistics about A, just small businesses in general, and B, statistics specifically related to women. And I was a bit appalled, yeah, by the minority of businesses that are owned by women, just in general, businesses that are owned that are making over $500,000 annually in revenue is such a small percentage. And then to segment that even more on women-owned companies. So yeah, I've been certified. This is my second year of being certified as a woman-owned business enterprise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the types of questions that they ask really lead me to believe that they've really had to screen out companies that would pose as being a woman-run enterprise to specifically get to gain some advantage illegitimately.
Yeah.
Because some of the questions they asked should be rather obvious things, and just physically verifying that you actually work in the business.
Sure.
I mean, I guess I'm still processing it. I haven't fully taken advantage of it. I'm, you know, putting those pieces in place because I think they're rather important. But honestly, I happen to be a woman running a business, but I have never really thought of myself as different from another entrepreneur,
right,
of any
right,
yeah,
shape
right,
or size.
I understand that, because I don't think of myself as like, oh, I'm a guy running a business. I just think like I'm an entrepreneur.
What
a,
yeah,
it, I mean,
you gotta work hard no matter what.
And
you're in the grind.
I couldn't have stopped myself if I tried. There was no way I was going to be someone else's employee forever. That just wasn't in the cards. So
yeah,
I don't think of it as like my, you know, middle-aged white male privileges got me here or any of the rest of it. I just think like, oh, I just, when I was in my 20s, sort of decided the future for me was in me owning my own business and running it myself. And that's where it led. But I think like we've been looking at this a little bit, and we're, you know, Sarah is also a sort of a co-equal owner in the business. And I think it's like we've done a real disservice to women and minorities. And I think like all that I had to go through, and I'm sure you too, of course, people, there's this huge barrier to starting businesses like this and running things. And then it's just magnified if you're a woman or if you're a minority.
Oh, totally.
Like, it
absolutely
just gets that much worse. And I think like, I think there's a generation of us starting businesses and running businesses who really want to reach out to people and give them the, at least the tools or the understanding of how this is
the mentorship.
Yeah, how this works,
which is something
and what
that you do too.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So
yeah,
you're,
I think
really
that's awesome,
giving a lot of yourself into this community.
And I actually think that's very important. It's actually part of my business model to have some semblance of something that I'm doing to mm-hmm. make the community that I'm in to give to entrepreneurs, because honestly speaking, I don't know of any entrepreneur that can say, like, I figured this out all by myself.
Right.
So it's not even as, like, I feel obligated, but it just feels natural mm-hmm. to give of myself to help someone else. Because every time I help someone else, I learn and gain something myself as well. So it's just part of my, I don't know, the fabric that has created me, like, it's important to me
to kind of
pay
give
it forward.
Back.
I mean, that's the best way to put it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if I can make a quick analogy that may or may not, may or may not work.
Oh boy!
But no, I mean, I never thought about it. But the like the old, if you look at a forest and like as it gets older and it gets into the old growth phase, like the big towering trees block the light and don't let the other little trees grow, and then but it actually is bad for it over time, and that's why fires would sweep through and storms mm-hmm. and then that falls. And so with businesses, like, I think it can kind of seem as if, like, why would the world need another tile company? Like, there are so many tile companies already.
Why would the world need so much? Why would they need another painting?
More art or another thing? Like, how could you possibly compete when the other trees are so enormous, right? But if like the forest isn't healthy unless the new trees get some mm-hmm. light and some, you know, can grow and stuff.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, and
there's my little analogy.
The possibility of them. I mean, like you said, I mean, you've got 30 people. You know, you're going into a rural area. The possibilities of employment.
Yeah, you know, being a responsible business
of that community. Traveling to these different rural areas and learning what was there. What's missing, because maybe two or three entities were like really fueling that.
So I know so much yeah. about that place. I mean, yeah. Wadena specifically, you know, some of the Lund manufacturer was up there, the boat company. And yep. then mm-hmm. I think Polaris was up there at one point too. Maybe I don't know, but I know Lund.
Everyone knows the example of Detroit.
Yep.
Yep.
Exactly. And the auto
manufacturing
same thing.
Where like a whole city can really rally around like one or two major employers, you know, some.
And if that goes away.
Yeah. Some people were offering me a building for like basically no money because the gummy bear manufacturers are no longer using this building that employed 200 people in it. Right, and it's just like a massive empty building now that the city mm-hmm. doesn't know what to do with.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was like a common mm-hmm. thing on this. Like, what? Is that a mega mall or is that? Oh, no, that's the building that's available if you want to. Like, what?
If you'd like to have this building.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe.
Well, I love the, like, the.
I want to take them all, by the way. So it yeah, is actually, yeah. it's every one of these places. So I went to three places, but all the people that I met behind these communities and their passion and dedication to make their community a better place. Like
mm-hmm. so wonderful.
There were so many times where I was so moved and inspired by what they were doing.
Yeah.
So
like you want to save every building.
I want to save all of them or like yeah. this whole like deluxe small business revolution yeah. and what Amanda Brinkman is doing to like revitalize small communities and like focusing, you know, they're just finished their third season of just revitalizing these small rural areas. Like I
think that's got to be our future.
Oh yeah. Like so that's what's pulling me ahead. Like of any of these like struggles unique to my business or unique to this arts nonprofit that I'm on the board of is like, I'm just so aware of the bigger problems out there that I can make it through these tougher times of things that are on a local basis because I really mm-hmm. want to make a impact at the national level and then at the global level because, you know, manufacturing in the U.S. is something that is being revitalized, but it can't be done at the rate that it's at.
It's not gonna happen overnight. These things don't just start and then everything works out perfectly. Like, it has to be a slow revolution.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think the
slow and steady wins the race. I've always believed in
the
that.
The craft yeah. brewing revival or whatever, I like the model that is because they're not in competition with one another.
No,
so they're very
all.
Collaborative, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. And there's like a big community and you wonder how many of these breweries can exist, but they seem to be doing fine and they're employing 10, 12,
it's
20 people,
amazing.
Whatever it is. It's great.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. So why couldn't
and that
an
can
art
happen
studio
with,
like
that
Jim
can happen
doesn't
with a
have
lot
to stretch
of
his own
things.
Canvases. He doesn't have to prime his own canvases.
Oh, he does too. Look
others,
at him. He's the total perfectionist.
But
it's
others
got to
could
be.
Do that, right? So he could
others
paint more,
could do that.
Right? Or yes. others could wrap them to bring them to a show. Or I'm just totally like, I'm
I
not
know,
sure how
you
prepare
you
them. But you know
yeah,
what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm always
yeah.
thinking like that. Right. Or someone could source the canvas for you and
absolutely.
Cut it down and whatever.
Yes.
So there's other things that you can have people do, like on that craft brewery model,
so
or
there
just
are,
as a small business
mm-hmm.
model, so that you can do
I mean,
the work that only you can do.
Yeah.
As we were talking, I mean, I've been in Northeast for so long now. I mean, this whole area has just that's what energizes. It has to have an influence on you.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
That's why
because,
I'm here.
You know,
I like
you've,
being in
you're
it.
Part of this. I mean, you grew up not very far from Northeast,
mm-hmm.
you know, so like to see this area change and these old buildings that, you know,
are brought to life.
Brought to life,
yeah.
yeah. Like the history of the Thorpe Building
yeah.
that
oh,
you were talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. And now,
and it's all about
it's just
legacy.
Rich,
and, I mean,
you
know?
Yeah.
You
know,
that's
it
why
is.
We're that's why we're doing this podcast,
right.
and that's why we're
mm-hmm.
talking.
So
about
it
this
seems
stuff.
Seems natural that we would, you know, being the environment that we're in, we would come up with sort of a legacy sort of app or. Just
oh, I mean,
be
it's
interested
completely
in that,
to be able
you know?
To tell the story. Like, if these walls could talk,
right?
You know, we're in the
well,
this
we're
is
in
the
grain
the land
belt
of where the movers
house.
And shakers were.
Right.
We're along the river.
Yep.
We're along the railroad tracks.
Yep.
This is where all the action was happening as the U.S. was just getting on the map.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I love it all. It's,
I do too.
The
I
history
too.
Of things
yeah.
and the history of the community. I mean, it's always fascinating.
I think you're
there's
very
so much I don't know.
Inspirational.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Really. You're really doing a great job out here, you know?
Thank very you.
Yeah, cool. I would say that you're model of what good citizenry is and being a part of the community, and you care about it all, and I think it's awesome. You know?
Yeah, I truly do care about it all.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, I wish I could. I always want to do more.
There's nothing about you that isn't genuine, you know?
Yeah. It really and shows.
I don't think, like I said a little bit ago, like I couldn't have stopped myself if I tried from doing what I'm, and I think both of you, like, you make art not because someone's saying you should make art, and you do.
Well,
you're making tile.
Something grabs a hold of you. Like, it picks you. Mm-hmm. I always say that.
Yeah.
You don't pick
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
I didn't pick tile.
Right.
I wasn't even looking for it.
Right.
Yeah.
It grabbed you, and
it's
then.
So crazy.
And then
yeah.
you can't, it won't
There's
let go.
There's too much to learn about it. I won't learn enough about it before this lifetime ends.
Well, and
I feel the exact same way.
I install a lot of tile, and I love tile, but you can buy really cheap machine manufactured tile, and it's great. It's fine. Whatever. It is nothing like your tile. Like, the difference, the life that it comes, like.
Oh, it's got depth.
Yeah, it's like preloaded with life in it. Yeah. And then you put it into a space, and that gives the house life. But there's, like, manufactured tile, it is sort of dead when you get it, like when it's from a machine. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, it does, because the intention of the maker, and to have, you know, 9 to 15 sets of hands adding a little of their sensibilities into it, and it, you know, it, from the conception of what it's going to be to the person making it, to the person adding color to it. Like, I mean, just even the caliber of our crew that loads and unloads our kilns, is that's an art. The gentleman that runs it, Louis, also does iron pours and is a really big fixture at Franconia and across the U.S. now. And that, his level of care and, like, the teamwork on his team, like, he took an area that was like the highest turnover area in my company and made it into a hardcore team where, like, they take their breaks together. They really enjoy each other's company and camaraderie. And, like, that forming independent of me is then what then in return drives me to make it a better company. Yeah.
It's like, so good. Yeah. It's so
healthy. I honestly feel like I'm 2 years behind.
Well,
like,
now you've got me all excited. Like, we do need.
And I could tell you that about every department in my company. Like, these people are like, they're taking it beyond what I could show them and do for them. Yeah, they're making it better, and they care about what they do. That, because I want them to feel good about their quote unquote day job, because all of these people have a very multidimensional life. They organize amongst themselves. Tile elf markets, like, they're doing one on December 8th where they're going to sell their art. Like, 15 of them were set up during Art of World, and some of them had, you know, the best sales they've had at some of their shows.
Yep.
So it's very remarkable. Or, like, my success isn't if one of them is leaving to do their side gig as their full-time gig. Like, that's a sign of success. And how they leave an area after they've worked in it, you know, they'll help me update the how-tos as best as possible. Like, we celebrate them leaving because someone is going to work full-time, you know, doing woodworking, or someone is going to launch their painting company, or someone's going to go on to be a full-time photographer, or someone's going to go on to be...
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Like, that's, and we have a lot of that.
I mean, we just kicked one of our little guys out the door, Paul, who didn't kick him out the door.
What my old boss, I mean, Josh at Clay Squared, he and his wife, like, saw that in me. So it wasn't like a, hey, get out of here. You know, they were like, sometimes you kind of need someone to nudge you out. Yeah. So
you can kind of
explore his
your
wife,
own
Lael,
vision.
Is, I would say she's a serial mentor. She affects so many artists in a positive light, and she's just such a nurturer. And you know, she had some really very kind words for me and just encouraging me to go out on my own when I was kind of freaked out about it.
Well, thank goodness she did, you know. I mean, really,
you know, my 23-year-old self was like, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're not really supposed to do anything cool when you're 23, because I mean, people do, but that's a rough time to be thinking big, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, you guys, I think we should wrap it up. We've got another 30 or 40 minutes into this one. So I want to thank you for coming in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talking.
My pleasure.
Thank this you has been, so much.
Love talking with you guys.
Tons it's of fun. Really yeah, we don't even really know each other that well yet, but this is a different way to get to know someone.
Yeah.
So
it's cool.
Yeah.
Tons very of fun. Nice. So, Jim, thanks.
See ya.
Mercedes, thank you very much.
Sam, yes, thank you, gentlemen.
All right.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. We love comments and feedback, so go ahead and let us have it. If you'd like to learn more about Andelin and other legacy projects, visit the website at andelin.app or kineticlegacy.us. Take care.